Hey now, we are getting over, and I am the Silver King, Adam Silverstein, here to lead you through these hard times. With a special NXT Stand and Deliver Ultimate Preview Edition of your favorite professional wrestling podcast. That's right, Getting Over is back once again, and we are here to break down everything that happened on the Go Home NXT Tuesday night before we preview NXT Stand and Deliver 2024. We will break down every single match on the card with predictions and analysis of what we expect to happen going ahead in NXT storylines. The Silver King, Adam Silverstein, is here. Vintage Chris Vanini, not part of this show, but he will be back with us on Thursday for our bonus WWE episode. Yes, we did decide to do a bit of a schedule change, which is why you are getting this one day earlier than we said initially this week when we dropped that schedule for you. Let's go ahead and remind you what's happening this week in the world of Getting Over. Of course, on Tuesday, we had your WWE WrestleMania 40 Ultimate Preview, the longest podcast in the history of this show, and we hope it delivered for you because we broke down all 13 matches across two nights of WrestleMania, gave you a ton of predictions, a ton of analysis, not just in terms of WrestleMania 40, but WrestleMania 39 going into 40 the entire last year in WWE, and then what might be to come after WrestleMania 40, not just on the Raw after WrestleMania, but going forward. All of that already in your podcast feed, your WWE WrestleMania 40 Ultimate Preview. We are, of course, talking NXT and NXT Stand and Deliver today on Thursday. We're coming back with a bonus WWE show. We're going to give you our thoughts on the CM Punk and Cody Rhodes interviews held with Ariel Helwani on the MMA Hour. We're also going to talk Roman Reigns edition of Biography. We have some comments on the debut of WWE Speed. Also, an eating contest that was held between Otis and Omos, hosted by, of course, Big E, because who else in WWE would host an eating contest?
Big meaty man slapping meat. That's
what I want. We're going to discuss all of that, plus any extraneous WWE news on a special Thursday podcast. We're going to hold off conversations on the Bray Wyatt documentary. More on that in a moment. It is possible we have a special WrestleMania go-home show for you Friday, as soon as SmackDown goes off the air. More likely than not, we'll simply work that into our instant analysis episodes. And let's go ahead and tell you about those. Saturday afternoon, we will have your NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis. Saturday night, your WrestleMania 40 Night 1 instant analysis. And then Sunday night, your WrestleMania 40 Night 2 instant analysis. And then on Tuesday, your WWE Raw After WrestleMania breakdown. We'll also talk the WWE Hall of Fame, the Slammy Awards, and the Bray Wyatt Becoming Immortal documentary. So that should be a full show for you on Tuesday after WrestleMania. Folks, that's 7 podcast episodes in an 8-day span, and that's just what we do for you right here at Getting Over. So allow me to remind you that this show
is all about Defy.
Please head over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify, especially this week during WrestleMania week. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. It is also where you can vote in our pre- and post-show polls surrounding Stand and Deliver and both nights of WrestleMania. We will use your polling, your opinions on these shows, to help further inform and highlight our discussion in those WrestleMania and NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis episodes. Also, please do not forget,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover, sign up, you will get bonus audio, the fastest 5 minutes in professional wrestling, instant reactions to Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown every single week, along with exclusive news posts every Friday. We try to interact with folks who message us on there, and it is just a great community that we want to continue growing all at buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Now, this show is completely about NXT. Of course, Stand and Deliver is the tentpole premium live event for the company. It is going down Saturday in the early afternoon, of course, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, before night one of WrestleMania. It looks like WrestleMania each night is going to be around 62,000, 63,000, maybe slightly more fans. Stand and Deliver, last I saw, it's around 12,000. They may hit 13,000 for the show. That is fantastic. It's at least triple, I think, what these shows have done of late. Of course, it is WrestleMania weekend in a major city, Philadelphia. Most of them are not on the same weekend as a major event, and certainly not in a major city like Philadelphia. So there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on this product, and it's going to be real interesting for us to break down this card, because I do have some thoughts on the way WWE put this together, knowing how big of a weekend it is for the brand. But before we get to the NXT Stand and Deliver Ultimate Preview, let's go ahead and discuss everything else that happened on NXT this past Tuesday night. Nathan Frazier and Axiom fought LWO and the Good Brothers in a triple threat match to determine the number one contenders for the NXT tag team titles. This opened the show with a frenetic pace and the true triple threat rules. You guys know we love those here. Topes, high risk moves, Spanish fly, springboard combo, inverted and regular DDT. Most of those hit by Frazier in the early going. LWO hit a tandem missile dropkick on Luke Gallows, and Joaquin Wilde did a tornillo outside. Axiom did a top rope Spanish fly. Wild was helped with the leverage springboard into Gallows for a flying catch DDT. Frazier totally missed a move outside. Carl Anderson flung himself out to follow. Then Cruz del Toro did a Escalera tornillo into everyone, only to take Magic Killer in the ring soon after. Frazier caught him with a 450, and Frazier and Axiom ended up advancing to Stand and Deliver. Frazier was jacked up after the bell, promised to deliver even crazier stuff in Saturday's match. Axiom co-signed, and he stared down the Wolf Dogs, who are now wearing their own merch in the Crow's Nest. This, for me, was a total shocker. We've been speaking on it for weeks. The Good Brothers would obviously advance into this match. Of course, you're going to use the main roster superstars for your biggest NXT show of the year. And I figured if it wasn't them, then you'd put LWO in there, both for the star power, the brand, and for the fact that they can put on a really exciting match. So this was completely out of left field. My assumption this entire time has been the Good Brothers would win, and they will make the perfect team to take the titles off Baron Corbin and Braun Breaker, because Breaker probably needs to drop that title before he moves up to the main roster full time. Now, I don't know what the hell to think. We'll talk about it in a moment. The match was super fun. I went 3.75 stars, B+. Fallon Henley fought JC Jane. The friends of both women were ringside. Kiana James distracted, so Thea Hale ran through the ring for a tope suicida. Chaos ensued outside. They all started brawling, so Henley left her match to help Hale. They got to stop having baby faces do shit like this in WWE. When she left the match, and I don't think this was on purpose, like in kayfabe, it looked like she punched Thea in the face, either instead of or alongside Izzy Dame, who she was targeting. When Fallon went back inside, JC caught her with a pump knee and got the quick win. JC then talked a bunch of shit backstage as we finally saw NXT's gorilla position for the first time ever. She reiterated that she was never Thea's friend. She saved Chase U and created the calendar just to regain the spotlight that never should have been taken away from her. Ava forced her out of Gorilla, telling her to shut up. Lexus King walked through to enter for his match. Then the faces came through the curtain, screaming their heads off, angry at what JC and the heels did. Ava made a snap decision. There's going to be a six-woman tag team match at Stand and Deliver. So this was storyline driven. So the short match was okay. But I really wanted to see both of them, Fallon and JC, go the distance one-on-one. This is a constant complaint I have in NXT, where they give you a singles match that you really want to see between women. It only goes a couple minutes because it's setting up a larger story, and they never actually get back to the singles match that you want to see. Hopefully, in this case, they eventually do down the line. It seemed clear that this would result in a six-woman match really last week, and the fact that they're doing it now, of course, is great. The way they executed it was fantastic. Using Gorilla as a living, breathing part of the show, Ava being front and center, hearing both of their complaints into the camera and then reacting from behind them with a snap decision. That's really cool. JC's promo was fantastic. We've said before, she's the total package. She would thrive on the main roster whenever she eventually gets called up. Thea was chaotic, like a ball of energy as usual. That's fine for now, and it's probably okay for like another year. At some point, she's going to need to adjust her character and just get a bit more serious. You can be energetic, you can be exciting, you can be a Tasmanian devil, but you can't be that way all the time. I loved the character that she was showing when she was a tweener, and she needs to keep some of that now that she's back to being a full-time babyface. Obafemi fought Joe Gacy in a non-title match. Gacy was attacked during his entrance with a Sean Spears chair shot. This looked really cool because for Gacy's entrance, they turned the camera upside down, or at least they turned the picture upside down in the production truck. So he got hit with the chair while the camera was upside down. The way he collapsed just looked really cool. Oba chopped the soul out of Gacy's chest. Then he ate a side suplex and a lion salt. Then he countered Gacy's finisher and did a shot put toss. And immediately after that, there was a match stoppage. The referee threw up the X. It looked like Gacy's head banged off the canvas and he maybe got thrown for a loop or concussed. Oba looked like it really affected him at first, like he was worried that he actually hurt somebody. And that's probably the only time that's happened to him so far in his young career. It was an unfortunate end to what was actually a pretty interesting match. The goal was for Femi to get a clean pinfall victory going into Stand and Deliver. Obviously, that did not happen. But beyond that, the energy got completely sucked out of the crowd because they were so worried about Gacy getting hurt. Femi didn't seem to have done anything wrong per se, but it does stand to reason, very similar to the Brutus ball that they were using on the main roster, the Creed brothers, that a move like the shot put toss, it can go wrong without anyone meaning for it to go wrong. Just you're taking someone the full weight of their body and you're just chucking them across the ring. And at some point, someone's going to land wrong. And I know you could say, well, someone can land wrong on a suplex, Silver King. Someone can land wrong on a brainbuster. All true. But when you're just flinging someone into the air, there's a lot less control than when you're doing, let's say, a powerbomb or when you're doing another move like that. So I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I think he needs to almost do it more as a toss powerbomb where he gets someone up with their legs around his neck and he throws them forward as opposed to just taking someone from the side and just chucking them into the ring. Again, he didn't necessarily do anything wrong here because he's just doing what he's told and he's still immensely green at this juncture, but it seems like it's a move that creates unnecessary risk. And it's the same thing with the Brutus ball. I can't believe they're still doing that. I know it's not necessarily their finisher anymore, but the fact that they're doing it on TV, it just doesn't make sense to me. People have gotten hurt multiple times. And by the way, that actually looks bad. At least the shot put toss looks really cool. Anyway, Gacy later went to Ava's office and demanded a match against Spears on Saturday. So clearly he was hurt to some degree, but not hurt enough where he had to leave in the hospital or where they didn't allow him to continue performing on the show. And that, of course, is a huge positive. Sol Ruca fought Blair Davenport. Sol put together some really unique offense before Blair went after the injured knee. She ran it into the steel steps. They did the vertical suplex spot over the ropes. Ruca then did a one-legged springboard splash, which was crazy to see someone do that. She sold the knee before hitting a ridiculous top rope cartwheel DDT. I know luchadors have done it. Never seen someone her size do it. Davenport pulled her leg out during a Soul Snatcher attempt, hitting like half a Falcon Arrow. Ruca then countered Kamigoye with a weak roll-up for the pin. This match was going pretty damn well until the finish. And I'm not exactly sure why. The Soul Snatcher counter was great. Something seemed off with Blair, though. Maybe it got clunky, and then when they did the roll-up, it was just too slow. I'm going to chalk it up to happenstance. Everything was super smooth up until that point. There's no ceiling as far as I'm concerned on Soul's future. She just needs reps and reps and reps. Hopefully she's working that Florida loop for NXT. Blair taking the L here, it hurt a little bit because she really should be among the top women in the division coming out of Stand and Deliver, but they can certainly have her get a win back sooner than later, and she can work her way up the card as she has previously. Carmen Petrovic fought Lola Vice. Natalia gave Carmen advice backstage before Roxanne Perez walked up, scoffed at the idea of listening to a veteran, and then walked off with Natty staring daggers at her. Carmen was rolling a bit, only for Lola to catch her with a back fist and lock in the sharpshooter while sticking out her tongue and taunting Natty while getting the submission victory. This was the most personality that Lola has ever shown inside the ring. And I don't say it for
gonna look good, but she's got me saying, hey now,
those types of reasons. But she looked so badass sticking her tongue out at Natty and smirking at her and giving her that face, just like She's disgusted at her. She doesn't need her. She doesn't respect her. I want more of that Lola Vice and less of the dancing. The bell rang and she just stood there like doing the hip shake over and over again for, it must have been at least 90 seconds. Look, you want to do it initially when your arm gets raised because that's your gimmick? Fine. After that, be a badass. Be a former MMA fighter. Say that you just want to destroy people. That's what she's good at. She has legitimately great strikes. But all the excess stuff, the ridiculousness, it kind of hides some of that. I want Lola Vice to be Lola Vice, the badass Cuban woman who can just beat the ever-loving shit out of people. We saw some of that in this match. I loved that she used Natty's finisher and taunted her. And just the way she carried herself here was so much more confident than when she then stands up and just starts dancing and shaking her hip. You don't need to do that. Von Wagner fought Lexus King in a taped promo from his throne. King said he's baffled by Wagner wanting another shot at him, this time on his own, given that he's not even able to take care of himself and totally leans on Mr. Stone for everything. Wagner charged him on his entrance and dominated offensively with a number of big slams, including a choke slam on the apron. Wagner actually botched a power slam on King through a table because he was unable to lift him on the first go. The second go was a DDT counter ringside before Coronation inside with Lexus King getting the win. At this point, I don't know that Von Wagner is going to improve. Like, seriously, I watch his matches and
it's the same thing over and over and over. It's like missionary position every single night.
Every match is the same. He slams a bunch of people around. He goes for the table powerbomb. Sometimes he gets it. Most of the time he doesn't. And most of the time he loses. Is he a badass? Is this the guy who beat Kyle O'Reilly? I mean, they're not treating him that way. I don't think he's booked poorly. I just think he's not a great wrestler. And for some reason, they just keep him in their creative plans. And he seems like a really nice guy. So it's nothing against him whatsoever. But the character just doesn't work. It's not interesting. It's not garnering babyface attention the way it was for that very short period of time when they did the head injury angle. Now he's just back to what he was doing before. And it's like, who actually cares about Von Wagner? Unfortunately, the answer is nobody. Ren Sinclair walked in as Ariana Grace was going through the gowns that she was preparing to have Gigi Dolan wear. Ren didn't understand why Ariana was trying to change her, given pageants are supposed to be about expressing yourself and showing your individuality. They are? I didn't know that. And that obviously pissed off Grace, who decided that she wanted to go so far as to fight her over it. The character acting for Ariana remains totally on point. I'm kind of curious why this Gigi deal has not progressed. Is she sick or something? It's odd that they started this angle and they're going nowhere with it, yet they keep talking about the fact that the angle is ongoing. So there has to be some type of extenuating circumstance. So we got Sinclair against Grace. Ren chopped the hell out of Ariana, but Grace dodged her in the corner and then locked her in a really tight pinning combination near the turnbuckles, and she used the bottom rope as extra leverage for the win. Sinclair, let's be clear, she's 20 times the wrestler of Grace at this point. She clearly had to slow herself down just to make the match work. Ariana got the win because she's the one involved in a story, and that's fine, especially given the way it was done. But I would really like to see Sinclair get a legitimate push after Stand and Deliver, at least to the level of Kalani Jordan, if not more. So that was NXT this week. Everything that led into Stand and Deliver, but maybe did not necessarily have to do with the show. Items that developed matches, but were not further developments and storytelling from matches that were already booked. So let's go ahead and switch gears. We'll hit your NXT Stand and Deliver 2024 Ultimate Preview. Right now, we're going to go match by match on the card from the undercard all the way to the main event. We'll discuss what happened on NXT and give you some final predictions and picks for these matches. Let's start with Joe Gacy against Shawn Spears. And I believe this is going to be on the kickoff show. So this was, of course, developed over the last couple of weeks across NXT. You have Gacy, who's been doing this new character, but losing pretty consistently. Spears, who just got a victory over Ridge Holland before losing to Dijak. That led into his North American Championship qualification. And you also have Gacy here, who is currently doing a character where wins or losses for him just do not matter whatsoever. And I don't know that the result of this match matters that much either. There's only really two ways it can go. One is that Gacy surprises Spears, catches him in a pinning combination, gets the win, and that leads to the continuation of the story. The other is that Spears beats Gacy, and Gacy doesn't leave him alone, and that leads to the continuation of the story. I don't think it's going to end here at Stand and Deliver. So I'm going to go with Spears getting the win. He's the one that's pretty new to the brand, still getting built up to a degree. It just makes more sense for him to go over in the spot. And Gacy's not really a babyface. So if you're looking for like a babyface pop kickoff show moment, you're not exactly going to get that from him. You might actually get it a little bit more if Spears wins. I don't know that either guy is going to have the fans rally around him in either direction, but that is the best guess I can give in terms of the way this match is going to play out. Let's move to Fallon Henley, Thea Hale, and Kalani Jordan against JC Jane, Kiana James, and Izzy Dame in a six-woman tag team match. Now, we obviously just discussed the entire build on the go-home and the match being booked. This, of course, has transpired for the last few weeks. The primary rivalry here is Thea and JC. Of course, Kiana and Fallon is the secondary, and then Kalani and Izzy are just playing the third wheel in both cases. And generally, when you have a multi-person match and you can then split it up and have singles matches coming out of it, you have the heels go over in the multi-person match, and then the babyfaces win the rematch in singles competition. So Fallon, obviously, against Kiana, and Thea against JC. Thea JC is where this needs to end, and I don't know that it makes sense to have the babyface get the win here, no matter which one of them was to get the fall and no matter which person takes the fall. I don't know that it makes sense to have the babyfaces win this, because when you go through this card, there's a lot of other spots where it looks like faces are going to win on Stand and Deliver. So you combine the fact that in the multi-person match, it makes more sense for the heels to go over, plus the fact that Thea over JC needs to be the end of that feud, and also Fallon over Kiana needs to be the end of that feud, although that's kind of started and stopped a number of different times. So I have the heels getting over here, Jane, James, and Dame, and I do think sooner than later, probably at the next NXT Premium Live event, we get that Thea-JC match, one-on-one non-title situation with Thea finally getting over JC and Jane getting her comeuppance. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if that led to JC leaving NXT and going to the main roster. It might be too soon for that. I don't know that the women's division on the main roster needs many more people right now, but that is the way I would look at this going forward. Let's move to the tag team championship, the Wolf Dogs defending against Nathan Frazier and Axiom. I was actually kind of surprised that we didn't get much from the Wolf Dogs on the go-home NXT. We saw them in the Crow's Nest. There was a social media video before the show began with them showing off their new merchandise in the parking lot, and that was pretty much it. I feel like they kind of gave away the result of this match. Number one, by Frazier and Axiom being the challengers. And number two, the fact that they just created merchandise. These guys have been champions for like a couple months. The gimmick has been over for a long time, and they didn't capitalize on it. But now they're giving them merchandise right before WrestleMania weekend. And sure, they can sell plenty of it in Philadelphia and through the WWE shop. By the way, if you ever want to buy anything on the WWE shop, we have a link in our profile, our link tree. There's a WWE shop link right there. We get 10% of all your purchases. They come to benefit getting over, and it doesn't cost you an additional dime. You also get coupons and a ton of stuff. So use that link in our Twitter bio at Getting Overcast. Back to the match. Didn't mean to throw an ad in there. Just thought I should mention it. They just came out with this merchandise. Yes, Bron Breakker is getting debut vignettes on SmackDown. Yes, he's already had two matches there, but we've also seen people do double duty, and the guy lives in Orlando. So it's really not that difficult for him to work in Orlando on a Tuesday, get 2 days off, and then fly into whatever city SmackDown is and work on Friday, especially if he's not going to do WWE house shows, which even if he did, would be over the weekend. So for me, I came into this thinking, well, clearly the Wolf Dogs are going to lose and Braun's going to get his full call up and Corbin will go back to doing something else. I don't know if that's the case anymore. So I have the Wolf Dogs actually retaining the titles over Frazier and Axiom. And I think they remain champions while Braun is on the main roster for a short period of time. And eventually they lose to a different team. I don't exactly know off the top of my head what team that would be. Maybe it's a newly formed team between two singles wrestlers. I'm not there yet. It could be something like Dijak and Josh Briggs forming together if neither of them win the North American Championship. That is something that could work. But I think what's happened here, at least to a degree, is the Wolf Dogs was meant to be temporary, but people are absolutely loving them together. I mean, Corbin and Breakker, they look like they're legitimate friends who bounce off one another perfectly, both from a comedic and a dramatic standpoint. And really, if you want to reintroduce Corbin to the main roster, bringing him up with Breaker and having the Wolfdogs show up on SmackDown and win the tag team titles, especially if they get split during WrestleMania, that would be a great way to kind of reinvent Corbin and start Breaker off in a meaningful way as a champion right on SmackDown without him having to win a singles title. So that's what I would do. If I had the book, if I had the pencil, I would have them retain for a little bit, eventually lose, go up to the main roster together, win the tag team titles in short order. I don't know if that's going to happen. I could be completely wrong. They may just lose them right here and Breaker gets his call up and Corbin stays, or Corbin gets called up and goes over to Raw. Not totally sure, but again, that's what I would do. And that is going to be my prediction. The Wolfdogs, surprisingly for me, retaining the NXT tag team titles. Let's move to that North American championship I just mentioned. Oba Femi defending against Dijak and Josh Briggs in a triple threat match. And yes, folks.
Big meaty man slapping meat.
I mean, on Saturday afternoon in Philadelphia, there's going to be a lot of beef out there.
There's a lot of beef out here.
And by the time that bell rings, they better reinforce the damn ring posts.
Reinforce the ring post. The beef's going to be flying tonight, gentlemen.
And look, you know what Booker T's going to say.
He don't want no water. He don't want no bread. All he wants is meat.
Shinsuke, why don't you tell them what we're actually trying to say?
I need some meat.
Yeah. Yeah, we need meat, and we're going to get it in this match. Oba, Dijak, Briggs, it's going to be flying around the ring. Briggs got a promo video package talking about getting advice from JBL that turned his career around and putting it all on the line Saturday. Dijak got one also talking about winning his first gold in NXT and being unstoppable. Femi watched them on a backstage monitor before he went out to the ring for his match that we already discussed. All three guys also had a stare down backstage that seemed totally unnecessary. It lasted 10 seconds. No one threw a blow at anyone else. It just was something that happened. The Briggs and Dijak packages were fine. Nothing overly special. In terms of the match, you know, Femi winning the breakout contract and taking the North American title made all the sense in the world. Both great decisions. The idea of platforming him, despite him being so green, despite him being a neophyte, it just raised his profile to such a degree where he said, okay, this is not just a guy who exists. This is a guy that I need to pay attention to and I know is going to be a big deal on the main roster. And yet, the title reign hasn't been great. And really, him being champion, it hurts NXT as a whole because he is so inexperienced, because he is so big, and he's the type of guy that you go into a match with and you say, how the hell is this guy going to beat him? You look at the other competitors here. Briggs, just starting out in his singles role, doesn't really need a title. He continues to need to develop that individual personality. Dijak has been kicking ass up and down NXT to the point there was a period of time where he was just straight up losing matches one after the other, but all of them were banger matches. I mean, your 4-star matches, nearly a 5-star match with Ilya Dragunov. Some will tell you it was a 5-star match, and that's totally fine if they believe that. I can accept that. This guy has been putting in the work, not just in the ring, as a character. He's one of the most compelling people on the entire brand, and he is someone who, if Dragunov is going to drop the NXT title, he would be the perfect person to take it from him or become champion soon after and be the steward of the brand, the next steward of the brand after Dragunov leaves and gets called up to the main roster. But since he's not in that title match, and since Dragunov has another opponent that doesn't seem to be a huge threat to him, we'll get to that in a moment, I think strapping up Dijak with the North American championship that he probably should have had at some point during the pandemic is the right decision. Also, in a triple threat situation, it creates a scenario where Femi does not need to get pinned to lose the title. And clearly they don't want to do that, or at least I would expect they don't want to do that. So there's two options. Dijak and Briggs, they team up on Femi. They hit him with a bunch of finishers. Dijak throws Briggs out of the ring and actually does pin Femi and beat him for the title. Or more likely is that Briggs takes a lot of punishment from Femi. Dijak hits him with one move, picks up Briggs, hits Feast Your Eyes, gets the 1-2-3, and becomes a new North American champion. But I think this is a move that absolutely has to be made on this show. There's really only two results on this show that I think are no-brainers from the standpoint of I would be shocked if Shawn Michaels did anything else. One of them is Dijak winning the North American championship. I would actually put that number one on the list. This for me is the singular decision that absolutely needs to be made. And we'll talk about the other coming up right now, because that is the NXT Championship Ilya Dragunov defending against Tony D'Angelo. Dragunov said he was on high alert for D'Angelo only to discover a boot on his car this past Tuesday on NXT. Suddenly, a couple Goombas rolled up telling him to get in the car, so he obliged. The spot that he ended up at was another warehouse in the area that the PC is located. I recognized it as such. Inside were more Goombas cutting and nailing wood with foreboding music playing as eight folks surrounded the table with Tony D sitting down. It was easily the coolest setup they've had for one of these for the entire duration of his gimmick since he debuted in NXT 2.0. Ilya gave Tony credit for leaning into the mind games. D'Angelo said it wasn't meant to signify the end of him, just the end of his title reign. Dragunov said nothing will stop him from leaving as champion. Tony grabbed Ilya's injured hand and squeezed it, reminding that he could take him out any second he wanted, but would instead do it while the whole world was watching so he could break the unbreakable. Then D'Angelo said, quote, "It's nothing personal, just business," and a plate of food was provided for Dragunov, like he would actually eat that given the setting that he was in. Any weekly listeners to this podcast know that I have been immensely critical, not only of D'Angelo getting his title shot, but the booking of this storyline. I gotta say, this segment may not have suddenly put me all in for the match, but it sure as hell raised the floor of my expectation level and got me actually caring about it, really for the first time. Perhaps I misunderstood the reference. My assumption was that this shop that he was in was one that was building caskets, the threat being that Dragunov could be taken out at any time and buried without anyone noticing. Think about the D movie level corniness we got from like the Legato D'Angelo family feud back in the day. This is D'Angelo family not just taking a heel turn, but taking a serious turn that has long been needed given the gimmick that they are trying to put forward. And like I said, I bought into it here legitimately for the first time. Tony's acting was on point. The entire setup worked so much better than the restaurant or any of the other things they did prior. He still feels like an undeserving challenger, D'Angelo, but he comes across as a legitimate threat now. And that was not the case entering NXT on Tuesday night. And despite the fact that he now comes across as a legitimate threat, and credit to some degree to Dragunov for allowing that to happen, selling the hand that Stack's injured, selling the fact that despite him being confident fighting D'Angelo, there was some apprehension, there was some hesitation to doing this meet and going through this process. Credit to Ilya for a lot of that. But despite all of those factors, when you're talking about the NXT title at a tentpole stand-in deliver event, there is no scenario in which Dragunov should be losing to D'Angelo. Particularly, really, this is more than anything else, because Dragunov has beaten far better singles competitors, and D'Angelo has not been built up in any meaningful way where you could say, this guy has gone through it, he's improved as a singles competitor, he's proven himself as a singles competitor by beating X person, Y person, and Z person. Therefore, the next logical step is for him to become champion. That is hardly the case. Really, what it should be is him losing this match, building up his resume, and becoming a challenger to Dijak down the line, and maybe even beating Dijak, and him becoming North American champion makes a ton of sense. But him becoming NXT champion and beating Dragunov to win the title, it really should not be in the cards. I'm sure the match will exceed my expectations because it is Ilya running the show and calling the shots. It'll be great. It'll exceed expectations. It'll probably be the third or fourth best match, probably the fourth best match on the show. But when you're talking the NXT Championship, despite the fact that the main event is non-title and this would have been pushed down the card anyway, when you're talking the NXT Championship, it would have been far more interesting to have a main roster challenger here, main roster challengers in some other matches. Anything that WWE could have done to provide a little bit of juice to NXT, because at the start of this year, really coming out of that Tuesday night war, quote unquote, that they won, they ran hot. Obviously, Becky Lynch was there for a time. Seth Rollins had a match there. Asuka had a match there. They were using some higher profile main roster superstars. But even at the early part of 2024, when a lot of that had stopped, NXT was doing really well from a rating standpoint. A lot of that has fallen off at a time where WWE should be hotter than ever. And the fact that they decided not to use any of the main roster superstars who currently do not have WrestleMania bookings and put them in this spot it's really just confounding to me. Why could it not have been Dragunov against Chad Gable? Could you imagine that match at Stand and Deliver? You just do Tony D'Angelo after the fact. Have Tony fight a signature singles match against someone else, build up his profile as a number one contender, and then let him get a title shot, either on TV in the main event or the next premium live event. But instead, this match is now. I would not have booked it, but I will give them credit because, like I said, business picked up on the go-home show, and I'm more interested in this than I ever was coming into Tuesday night. Still, Dragunov walks out of Philadelphia, the NXT champion. Let's move to the Women's Championship. Lyra Valkyria against Roxanne Perez. We had Supernova sessions on TV. Metaphor put themselves over as show hosts. Noam Dar introduced Perez by singing Roxanne. Lyra called Roxy on her shit, again, just like she did last week. Perez countered that Valkyria doesn't know what it's like to lose the title yet. Roxy said she's grown up, matured, and become more dangerous, willing to do things like snap Lyra's arm, which she wouldn't have in the past. Valkyria said all she does is win, but all Perez does is bitch, promising that she would have plenty to bitch about after Stand and Deliver. Roxy countered that she'd let out an entire year of rage on her. They got in shots on one another, and Lyra actually stood tall, putting Roxy through a table with an attitude adjustment to end it. The first half of this was rough, folks. And you know I like both of these women. It did pick up significantly from Lyra's bitch line onward. It was just too much talk coming out of them previously, talking a lot to one another. It wasn't the right segment to book. The promos were repetitive, but they did get there in the end. And while it wasn't the hottest go-home for a big show, it also didn't dissuade me from believing it's the legitimate co-main event of Stand and Deliver. Later backstage, Tatum Paxley was trying to be a friend to Lyra, saying what happened in the ring wasn't like her. Valkyria snapped and said, maybe she doesn't need to be herself. Maybe she has to be someone different if she wants to get past Perez. That's pretty much what Roxy was saying. So Lyra was leaning into that. Certainly an interesting development to kind of stiff arm a friend right before a huge title match. It almost seemed like Tatum was falling out of love with Lyra, given the character change. And maybe that plays into the booking. The fact that they put Paxley back on screen after she had been absent for a few weeks, it tells me she's going to factor into this match one way or another. I believe in the past, she's largely helped Lyra win. My guess is she gets involved here and accidentally leads to her losing. And Roxy takes advantage of whatever type of distraction or interference Tatum tries to provide and ultimately walks out of Stand and Deliver as the new NXT Women's Champion. I saw a report that the WWE folks, the main roster folks, are impressed with her and considering a call-up. I've not heard the latter part. Yes, I've heard they're impressed with her, no question. I have not heard that a call-up is anywhere near happening for Roxy. And the truth is, it really should not be anywhere near happening. Let us not forget, Roxanne Perez is 22 years old. And while she can go in the ring better than at least a third, maybe half of the main roster women, she still needs to develop character. She still needs to develop promo ability. And they just started her as a heel. This is very similar to what happened a year ago with Braun Breaker. I told you all in this space, it made no sense to call Braun up because just being champion for 2 years in NXT didn't allow him to do or learn much of anything. It did teach him how to carry the championship and how to be a babyface, but it didn't teach him how to be a complete wrestler. And what have we gotten over the last year? The best year that we've ever had from Braun Breaker, both because he was a heel and he did a lot of character work and learned how to show personality and different sides of his persona, but also the matches and the feuds that he was involved in, things that did not revolve around a title, then working into something that revolved around the tag team titles. He is so much more of a complete package now than he would have been a year ago if he got called up too early. We've seen what happens when wrestlers get called up too early. Look at Apollo Crews as a perfect example of that. Breaker has a much higher ceiling than Apollo Crews. I'm just giving you an example. Roxanne Perez, she does not need to be on the main roster whatsoever. Again, she's 22. You could keep her in NXT for two more years, and the type of performer that she would be when she gets called up 2 years from now, you would say, oh my God, strap her up, make her like Paige when she debuted, have her come in and answer an open challenge and win a women's title. That's the ceiling for Roxanne Perez 2 years from now. And if you want to call her up in 1 year because you say she's too talented and we need someone like her on the main roster, we need that, you know, real goody two shoes baby face that we haven't really had since Bayley, then you can go ahead and do that. But I bet you at least a year from now, you're not going to want to call, you're not going to want to call her up as that character because she's going to have advanced far past it. So Roxy, Cora Jade, you know, you keep them in NXT. Tiffany Stratton got called up at 24. I think that's what you look at when you're calling women up, and or men too, anyone. They don't need to be on the main roster at these most youthful ages. The goal is to develop the talent. You saw what happened with Stratton. You do the exact same thing with Roxy. Cora's injured. Maybe she needs 18 months when she comes back in NXT to fully get what you need to get from her before you call her up. But these are your top women right now in NXT, and rushing them makes absolutely zero sense. So regardless of that report, I have Roxanne Perez winning the women's championship on the show and being a heel champion in NXT, which it has needed for a while. Lyra has had a great title run. She's been really fantastic, and she's developed a ton coming out of beating Becky Lynch, her idol. I don't know that you need to call her up. You certainly could if you wanted to, if you want to fill out the mid-card of the women's division. But I would keep her in NXT, and I would have Roxy be the steward of the division for a good period of time, 6 months or so. And I think that is ultimately what they are going to do. Roxanne Perez walks out of Philadelphia as the new NXT Women's Champion. So let's finally get to Trick Williams versus Carmelo Hayes, a non-title match that will main event NXT Stand and Deliver. Ava visited Melo, informing him that she told the referee to be lenient on Saturday because she knows it's going to be a heated feud and they must have a winner in the match. A face-to-face was the booked main event. Melo was flanked by four mass security guards. Other NXT security surrounded both of them. Trick put over their accomplishments as friends and pointed out this match is historic, even if they are brothers going to war. Melo got harassed by boos every single time he spoke. Hayes said it's no longer them against the world, but him against Williams, given that Trick has ruined everything for both of them. Melo compared what happened with the titles to girlfriends. He said they both lost theirs, and Trick went after Melo's, even though he knew Melo still wanted her back. I actually kind of like that comparison, even though that is treating women like objects, and I know that wasn't his point, but by doing so, it was kind of the way it came across. But the comparison made a lot of sense from the vantage point of a heel. Williams basically called Hayes a hypocrite, saying he took advantage of situations himself. Melo said Trick would always take a backseat to him, and being hot for 6 months is nothing compared to being hot for 3 years, which is facts. He said the fans love Trick because he's on the rise, he's shining, but they'll flip on him right on a dime as soon as he starts to cool off. Williams said Hayes' envy is what this entire thing is about. Melo countered with a great line using his catchphrases, saying he'll prove why he's been on top for so long. And Trick countered saying he'd whoop that Trick and then whoop that ass to prove that he is the man in NXT. A pull-apart brawl ensued with Trick and Melo both taking out every single security guard. They cleared the ring for themselves to fight, so the locker room cleared out with like 20 or so guys separating them in a total melee as NXT went off the air. And what was pretty funny about this, I mean, it was great, energetic, really kept you captivated and made you want to see through the end of the segment. But what was funny is they're doing the pull-apart brawl, and all of a sudden, some of these wrestlers start fighting each other, almost like they were building to a battle royal segment. I just found that to be hysterical. Their goal was to pull these guys apart, not start fighting each other. I think some of them just got lost on what they were supposed to be doing out there. Now, I went a bit deep here with the breakdown, but it was an extended talking segment. Both guys did well. It started slow. It lacked juice at the beginning. The crowd was trying to take Melo off of his game. That really did not help the flow of the segment. But once both of them found a groove, they delivered. The final third of it was exceptional, with Trick and Melo both laying out their cases ahead of a really fun and funny, like I said, brawl, where they just beat the shit out of random people so they could get hands on one another. One reason it started slow was they tried to explain the history aspect of the match being unique. That's better left for video packages and commentators. This is the first time since SummerSlam 2001, Booker T versus The Rock, that two black men will main event a WWE premium live event in a one-on-one match. And I didn't do further research, but my guess is that it's the first time two black men are main eventing a WWE premium live event without a title on the line, period. The fact that it has been a quarter of a century since two black men have fought in the main event of a WWE show like this, it's patently absurd. It speaks to the inconsistency of WWE under Vince McMahon having multiple black main event performers simultaneously. these guys will eventually play a role in changing that trend on the main roster. And the fact that we get to see that now in NXT, it's just special. It feels special. I thought Swerve Strickland, Swerve in WWE, Isaiah Swerve Scott in WWE, I thought he was going to be a part of that change. Obviously, he got released. He is now thriving in AEW. It does feel in multiple ways that Trick and Mello have a chance to change the way WWE looks on the main roster. And I'm not putting it all on them. Obviously, Santos Escobar is already up doing good work. There's other folks who are doing a really good job. But in terms of developmental talent, having both of them at the top of their game, we know the ceiling is high for Mello. Trick is still green to a degree. He's still learning. It seems like the ceiling is going to be immensely high for him. Knowing that one day both of them will have opportunities like this on WWE main, it's just awesome. And then again, knowing that we're getting a taste of that now in the main event of NXT Stand and Deliver on WrestleMania weekend, it really means a lot for them. It means a lot for NXT. It means a lot for WWE. It means a lot for WWE fans, just from a representation standpoint. We talked about this with Bianca Belair and Naomi and Jade Cargill, seeing those three women together, seeing these two guys together. It's just something that unfortunately has been absent for far too long in WWE. And it's real exciting. Like I said, I'm kind of repeating myself a little bit, but it's real exciting to see them get this type of spotlight. And it's not just about having the match, but it's about having the story going into the match. That's really the bigger part of it. It's one thing to book a match. It's another to have a story that is so important and has drawn fans in from both sides of wanting Trick to get the comeuppance on Mello, really liking Mello and thinking Trick's not ready. You have so many people anticipating this. They did such a great job with Prime Target, bringing in CM Punk and Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, and Cody Rhodes weighed in at some point on that. It feels epic. And it's really exciting, like I said, that this is going to main event, Stand and Deliver. But it's epic, not just for the history and not just for the storytelling, but it's epic for the fact that we're getting a non-title match, period, main eventing a show of this caliber. We're getting one, of course, for WrestleMania. That one involves The Rock and Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. And it has relevance to a title match that's going to happen on night two. This is a non-title match just for being a non-title match. And that's super exciting in its own right. I've said exciting like 8 times here. Clearly, I'm jacked up for this match. In terms of the result and the prediction, maybe I spent so much time discussing how thrilled I am for it happening because there's not much to talk about. Trick Williams is going to win this match. You don't tell this story and develop this entire storyline and most likely have Carmelo going up to the main roster when it's over. You don't do all of this for Trick to lose, especially given the fact that he was on the wrong side of, you know, losing the NXT championship to Ilya Dragunov on the prior premium live event. So you have Trick win here and you strap a rocket to him and you put him on top of NXT. In fact, now that I'm thinking of it, that's even another reason that Ilya Dragunov needs to retain over Tony D'Angelo. Because if you want to make Trick Williams, you don't make Trick by having him beat Tony D. You make Trick by having him beat Ilya and send him off to the main roster. So Dragunov retains the NXT title. Trick Willie beats Mello in this grudge match main event. And hopefully by the next time we do one of these ultimate previews, or maybe two from now when it comes to NXT, we're talking Ilya, Trick, rematch, and Williams finally becoming the NXT champion and hopefully going on a run akin to the one that Bron Breakker had. Maybe not as long, hopefully not as long, but at least to the degree where it puts him over and he learns how to operate with a title, because Trick is the exact kind of guy, Mello too, don't get me wrong, but Trick is the exact kind of guy you want to see wearing gold on the main roster, let's say within the next 3 years. So folks, that was the full breakdown of NXT Stand and Deliver, match by match as promised. Let's go ahead and give you a pre-show expectation grade. As mentioned earlier, we will have pre and post-show polls on Twitter at Getting Overcast, where you have the opportunity to have your voice be heard. And we will discuss the results of both of those polls in our NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis. As far as my pre-show grade, it's actually a little bit tough because while I am immensely enthused for Trick and Mello and Lyra and Roxy, and I think we're going to get a lot of big time meat slapping in that North American Championship match,
there is beef flying all over the place.
I have others I can use, folks.
Big meaty men
to start slapping meat tonight.
That's going to happen at Stand and Deliver. I'm thinking that's going to be really good. Wolf Dogs, Frazier, and Axiom really has a chance to deliver. But when your NXT championship match is not one of your top two or three on the show, and your undercard is just kind of weak, largely due to call-ups and people who are injured and plans having to be changed, I can't get to an A, but I also think it's going to deliver better than a B+. So I'm going to go with an A-. I'm coming in 90 out of 100 as my pre-show expectation grade, and we'll see if NXT Stand and Deliver lives up to that, exceeds expectations, or falls below them. And we will discuss all of that on your NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis Saturday afternoon between that show and WrestleMania Saturday. You are not going to want to miss that. We publish as quick as we possibly can so that you can listen and have plenty of time to do what you need to do, your errands on Saturday, before you sit down on the couch for the WrestleMania kickoff show and obviously WrestleMania itself. So don't forget, Saturday afternoon, we will have the NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis episode. In terms of the schedule for the rest of the week here on the Getting Over Wrestling podcast, a reminder, in your feed already is your WWE WrestleMania 40 Ultimate Preview, Vintage Chris Vanini and the Silver King. We break down every single match across the two-night card. There are timestamps in that episode description. If you are listening late in the week and you just want to hear the Ultimate Preview portion, don't forget that. We will be back on Thursday with a special WWE episode talking the CM Punk and Cody Rhodes interviews with Ariel Helwani, along with the Roman Reigns edition of A&E Biography and other extraneous items in WWE. As mentioned, Saturday afternoon, your NXT Stand and Deliver instant analysis. Saturday night, your WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 1 instant analysis. And then Sunday night, your WWE WrestleMania 40 Night 2 instant analysis. Next Tuesday, we will have your next WWE episode covering Raw after WrestleMania, the Hall of Fame, the Slammy Awards, and Bray Wyatt becoming immortal. We have 7 podcast episodes for you in an 8-day span. I'll repeat once more. That's what we do right here on the Getting Over Wrestling podcast, particularly during WrestleMania week. I appreciate all of you listening to today's episode. Allow me to remind you on the way out that Getting Over
is all about Defy.
So head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. It is also where you can vote in those pre and post show polls. Again, Twitter at Getting Overcast. And finally,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up, you will get bonus audio, instant reactions to Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, along with exclusive news posts on Friday. Again, buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. That is it for NXT. Cannot wait for Stand and Deliver on Saturday. This is the Silver King signing off and leaving you with just 3 final words. Bye for now.